Hello anak muda. Hi guys. Welcome back to another STEM Hangat episode. STEM Hangat is a short series brought to you by the Sambal Pod where we talk about potential scientific careers, potential STEM careers based on thriving industries in Malaysia. So today, the industry that we are talking about is the environment. And if you guys dah sampai ke sini, this is actually the fourth episode. So thank you so much for giving your time. Thank you so much for your support. And I hope that all these past episodes were interesting to you. Okay, so today, about the environmental industry, we are going to be talking about all this environmental burden that we have Gen Zs have to deal thanks to all our older uncle and aunties lah who were not so responsible and also to all those irresponsible millionaires. Anyway, this conversation is a little different because it is divided to two episodes. So the first part, which is the one you're listening to right now, is actually a short one about the state of the environmental industry and also what you can do as a youth. You know, what kind of initiatives the government, the Malaysian government has prepared for us and how we as the anak muda can contribute. So we have two interesting guests as usual. This time we have Mr. Dana Raj Markandu, who is a senior analyst from the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia. And we also have Ms. Sumeshini Anaprampuan Subramaniam, the representative of the Environmental Engineering Technical Division Committee from the Institute of Engineers Malaysia. So, yeah, I hope you guys will enjoy listening it. Enjoy! National Energy Transition Roadmap, which from what I've read have listed out all these initiatives that the Madani government wants to do, you know. So we have a lot of big aims here, you know, net zero carbon emissions by 2050, 70% of the total energy just from renewables, even that also by 2050. So yes, please give your opinions on the initiatives.
Okay, hello Shaktra, and also to all the listeners, thank you for having me on the show. Well, the National Energy Transition Roadmap is quite an ambitious policy roadmap. It attempts to address Malaysia's energy transition across a very broad scope. It's not a perfect document. There's certainly some gaps and areas for improvement, but it puts us on the right track to move towards a cleaner energy system than what we have now. So in total, there are actually about 69 separate initiatives listed in the NETR, and it's spread across many, many diverse areas. So I'll talk about it from a big picture point of view, but if there are any particular initiatives that you would like to focus on, we can certainly dive deeper into that. From a technical perspective, there are actually 6 different technologies that the roadmap covers: energy efficiency, renewable energy, hydrogen, bioenergy, green mobility, and carbon capture. Now, some of these are things that we have been implementing for quite some time already, right? Like renewable energy, energy efficiency, green mobility, bioenergy. And what the NETR wants to do is it hopes to give all these initiatives, which we've already been doing for some time, more momentum to increase the applications, enhance the projects, implement more innovative solutions and things like that.
Currently, we can't even achieve 20% and we're at 2024. Okay. So the numbers, we really need to really think through, and then we really have to map it out and on all our approaches. And currently, we're really focusing on solar PV. So with that, we have to really give in-depth thought on how we're going to execute it. It doesn't only look into the NETR as well. It looks into the people aspect, the environment aspect, and as well as the governance aspect. So it's a holistic approach. Yeah. And it needs a lot of collaboration.
So it's actually quite important to at least have a basic understanding of what some of those common terms that you've mentioned earlier actually mean. You know, what does net zero mean? What does 70% renewable energy mean? Because sometimes we assume that we take these kind of terms for granted. We assume that we know what it means, but our own assumptions may not necessarily be the same as other people's. So let's maybe, as an example, let's try attaching some definitions to these terms, right? In the NETR, net zero doesn't mean absolutely no emissions produced. All it means is that any emissions that we create are balanced by the amount of emissions that are reabsorbed by our carbon sinks. So things that produce carbon dioxide is a carbon source, like power plants or factories and so on. While things that absorb carbon dioxide are carbon sinks. So you have natural ones like our forests or future technologies like carbon capture and so on. So actually, if you look at our recent national data, 65% of our current emissions, if you take the numbers at face value, 65% of them are actually already being reabsorbed by our natural carbon sinks, our forests. So to get to net zero by the targets which are set, which is as early as 2050, we just need to figure out how to close the remaining gap, which is 35%. Renewable energy target, what does 70% actually mean? In the context of NETR, that 70% actually refers to the installed capacity or the size of our power plants. It doesn't automatically mean that 70% of all our electricity is going to be low carbon. Why? Because some power plants, they can run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Others, like solar, can only operate when the sun is shining, or wind turbines when the wind is blowing. So that 70% number does not mean what most people think it does. I don't want to get too detailed into that, but hopefully it makes the listeners curious to go and explore further into the details.
We look at the Global Sustainability Index, right? So maybe later on your answer, you can explain how important is this index to the environment. We rank 132nd in this index, right? So what does this mean to the local industry? And also, what does it mean in terms of job opportunities? Because I feel like the whole purpose of this podcast is to tell you that, okay, we have certain challenges in Malaysia that Malaysia wants to focus on. And these are the jobs that youths can, these are some of the jobs that youths can venture into if they're interested.
Basically, the ranking tells where we sit, so which actually highlights the urgent need for concentrated effort to address environmental challenges. How do we strengthen our sustainability initiative and also promote responsible stewardship of natural resources? So we have to find a way or find means to prioritize sustainability in policies, investment, decision-making processes. So by addressing this, and when internationally or globally, when we can start positioning ourselves in that, we probably will go up the rank. So what are the activities that you can actually do or the youths can do to make the Global Sustainability Index much more better is definitely involvement. Before you get yourself involved, you have to understand how can you get yourself involved. What are probably parts or sectors that you can actually get yourself involved to make an impact? Again, you can go into from a policy and a regulatory implication, because we need governance. So governance comes from basically from policies, acts, laws, and so on and so forth. So if you have a proper policy and regulation, it will be easier to follow through, because you are going to do it. You're going to make sure the guideline is going towards the direction and you'll get the desired outcome. So that's coming from a policy and a regulatory implication aspect. So another part is also understanding the status quo. What I mean by understanding the status quo is you have to understand to what extent the environmental degradation has happened. What is our climate change vulnerability at? What is our resource management challenges are? So you have to know what status quo, the data involving that. So to be very honest, even data scientists is part of this environmental component of it. So it's not, because environmental is so huge that you can sit anywhere. But then again, the roles can be very, very interesting. You could be an environmental engineer, but you're focusing on data. You could be an environmental engineer, you could be focusing on R&D. You could be an environmental engineer. You have to understand, environmental is a foundation or a base, or a foundation or a basis for you to move to the relevant pillars, for you to get into a deep dive sector. So you can be in R&D, you could be into execution, you could be into policy, so on and so forth. So from that aspect. And then basically, not only that, looking at, you can look into public health concerns. What are the economic impacts? So not necessarily you become an environmental engineer, you do not know numbers. You need data and numbers so that you can do what we call better outcome and better impact. So something we call in our terms in or in the industry, we call it as cost benefit analysis. That means we need to know what are the actions that needs to be done short term, mid term, and long term. What are the costs that we need to put in, and what would be the benefit? So when you do this, it's in an economic aspect. So you have to see everything from a holistic approach. So some people would be very technical. So you can go into more into technical aspect like R&D, or you could go into more into execution. But it could be also financial. But there's also another layer of people who are more into management, who are more into, you know, awareness and so on and so forth.
Right. When like a new policy or a new roadmap comes up, you know, people within the sector get very excited, but it doesn't really filter out to the wider community. Same goes for environment as well. You know, but now the scenario has changed. Everyone's talking about it, right? So it doesn't matter whether you're someone who is traditionally within the NGO environment sectors, or whether you're working in a field that has traditionally not really spent a lot of time focusing on these sectors. It's really spread out. Like, for example, you know, people in finance are talking about it. There's a lot of on the ground NGOs, civil society movements talking about it. So when all the policies related to energy environment comes out, it really has triggered very wide discourse. And what that means is that there's a wide variety of jobs within these fields that maybe were not there like a couple of decades ago. Things like carbon credits is a new area that people are focusing on. So, you know, that requires new skill sets. And I said, even new technologies, carbon capture, hydrogen, all these things are developing. All these things are, we are experiencing all this development in real time. You know, even on IT, automation, artificial intelligence, people are figuring out new ways to apply these areas to things like energy, things like environment. So it's a very open field, definitely. You know, there are job descriptions coming out now which didn't exist perhaps 5, 10, 15 years ago. So it's really a very open field. So any background that you have, and if you're interested in climate and energy, there's definitely something in there for you. I used to work with people in the field who came into energy, but with a background in English literature, for example. Why? Because we need really good communicators. You know, we need really good educators. So I would recommend people to just think outside the box a little. If it is a field that you're passionate in, look at what your background is, look at what your strengths are, and try to find that niche that you can apply that to within the energy and environment sphere.
Oh, there's a solar problem. Okay, so how do we approach? So we create the awareness, people, make people understand what is the benefit to actually go into renewable energy. So how does it benefit the people? How does it benefit the environment? So when you are aware of that, the second stage is how do you execute it? So you, from the awareness stage, there will be what you can be a consultant, you can be a policymaker, you can be a lecturer, could be all these categories, and an educator perspective and a policymaker perspective. Then you have the execution. So you can be a solar contractor, and even in the solar contractor field, there is a lot of categories that you're looking at: CNS, civil and structural, mechanical and electrical, and there's also the environmental aspect of it. And then after that is the monitoring phase, and how do you actually monetize it? So you can look from a business entity. So how does this, you know, from doing the solar project, how does this give us a financial revenue? So when you put from this scale, so there is a lot of job opportunity, and the youths can really participate in it. Maybe you would not know at the beginning, but with the right mentorship or with the right seniors or with the right guidance, I think you can get that very easily.
This is something that's been shared by every panelist throughout every episode in STEM Hangat so far. Everyone's telling the youth, you know, they are not muda, to follow your passion, to find what your interest is. So I think a lot of us might be in the position where we do not know how to find our interest, because maybe we got so hyped up with, you know, as a generation who's like so interested in advocacy and
activism because of the things you see around your social media. Maybe you just had that interest because of that, because of all the TikToks you saw. So for you to find that specific niche, for example, right? So can you share some suggestions? How can these people begin to find their specific niche, or you know, anything that they could be interested in?
I think these days that is definitely a lot more challenging because of all the stimulus we get from social media, from all the ease of information which is available, things like that. So it's a bit hard to see where our own personal line stops and where the influence from external sources begins. So when I started working, it probably wasn't that challenging because our access to information wasn't as extensive as it is now, right? You sort of, you know what you learn in uni, you have access to those resources and that sort of develops your interest. But now, you know, we're being bombarded from information from everywhere. Even like myself in my job now, there's definitely a lot of information overload because the field of energy, the field of environment is so wide that it's really a big challenge keeping on top of all the new data, the new information which is coming in. So what I would say is try to step out of the echo chamber once in a while. You know, don't just be influenced by what other people are saying. And if you're talking about people who are within a STEM career, within STEM fields, one of the most important aspects of being in the STEM field is critical thinking, right? Because you must be able to assess information objectively from your own point of view and then decide for yourself. So I think that all these influencers and social media can definitely guide where you think your attention wants to go. But at the end of the day, I think we need to step out of that sphere a little bit and internalize and think for ourselves. What do we want to spend our time on? Because we have to realize that the time that we have is limited. And, you know, especially when we start advancing our careers and things like that, there's going to be a lot of... there's going to be a lot of demand on the limited number of hours we have per day. So if you only have X amount of hours a day to spend on something, what do you think is it worth spending on? You know?
Okay, so this is the end of the first part. Thank you so much, Mr. Dana and Ms. Sumishni, for your time. So to all the anak muda out there, stay tuned for the next episode where we will be diving deep about their respective careers. See you next week.